music. Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Sherry Winston, a celebrated sexuality teacher, author of really some great award-winning books, Women's Anatomy of Arousal, and that was the 2010 ASEC Book of the Year, Succulent Sex Craft, Your Hands-on Guide to Erotic Play and Practice. And Sherry has been on this program before, but not for a while. And she wrote to me, because I said, what would you like to talk about? And she said, how about talking about how to have great sex in light of the current hashtag Me Too conversations, some of which seem to be about women who are unhappy because they've had bad sex, not coercive, violent, or otherwise non-consensual sex, just sex that wasn't very good. So Sherry Winston and I are going to talk about how that can be prevented. So we're entitling this show hashtag Good Sex 2. Welcome back to the program, Sherry Winston.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's really good to talk with you again on the air. And yes, good sex too. We both like to talk about good sex. I first heard you talk at an ASEC, or was it Quad S, conference in June of 2014. And that was called the Ignored Anatomy. And the thing that I came away with that was new to me at the time, and not much is new to me because I've been doing this work for 35 years. Well, then it was a little less than that. But you talked about the vestibular bulbs. So we're going to get to vestibular bulbs because they're all under the labia. But that's wonderful. And you have these great drawings. And you're an artist in addition to all you're a midwife and an artist, and you're a talented lady.
Well, thank you. I'm very, I was very delighted that my artistic inclinations could come back around and be part of my life as a sexuality educator.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So, like succulent sex craft, lots of your own drawings, and then some wonderful art that you've collected that is reprinted in your book. It's makes it very enlightening as well as entertaining to read that book, and I've recommended it to quite a few of my clients. So I'll put all of this in the summary that I write up after the show. So we were going to talk about how communication, let's start with communication because most people should start with it, can help prevent bad sex.
Right. And before we get going, let me just make sure everyone knows what page we're on about this.
Yeah,
so,
okay. Go over that again. Yeah.
Me Too, the Me Too conversation is predominantly about people who have experienced some kind of boundary transgressions, sexual assault, harassment, rape, all of this whole large umbrella of sexual experiences that are unwanted and are boundary violations. That's not what we're addressing here. What I noticed in that conversation is that some women were chiming in, and what they were complaining about was not that they had sex that they hadn't agreed to have. They were consenting, but it just wasn't a good experience. It wasn't pleasurable. They didn't have a good time. They didn't have orgasms. And there seems to be a bit, I think, of mushing together what I think of as very different categories. And so I just want to make the distinction. We're talking here about when you're having consensual, partnered sex, how to make that a fabulous, fantastic, pleasurable experience for everyone involved. And I will say there are a lot of women who are not having that kind of sex. And I'm sure there are men too, but I think more often it's women who are having the dissatisfying sex. So I just want to, before we get going into all that, speaking of communication, I want to make sure people are very clear of what it is we're addressing on this show.
And I thank you for doing that, because you are clarifying it perfectly. And I have talked to our producer, Alex, and he is willing to take any of your calls. So if you want to call in and ask Sherry a question, she is a real expert, and I have my own expertise as well, but we're focusing in on Sherry. And so you can call 888-874-4888. Alex will answer. He'll pre-screen you. And then if you have a question that seems appropriate for our discussion, he'll put you on the air. So that's that. And by the way, Sherry will return to this program in 2 weeks, I believe, the 27th of March. Yeah. So we'll probably open that show, too. So if you don't have the nerve to call in today, you might save up for the 27th of March. So, yes.
Yeah,
so we're
doing that because this is
go ahead,
such a big topic.
Yeah, it's a big topic.
It's a big topic.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we wanted to make sure we could touch on all of the many factors that we need to understand and address and learn about so people can have amazing, fantastic sex.
Yes, that's what we want. So shall we talk about some about communication? I know as a therapist, I often have to help the couple communicate better before they have to stop being so angry with each other before they want to have sex with each other. So,
right.
Communication is pretty central.
You know, the thing about communication is that we're actually communicating all the time, but we aren't necessarily doing it well or clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether you're in a long-term relationship, whether it's a new connection, even if it's a one-off, one-night stand kind of a thing, if we can learn to develop our communication skills, then we will have not just a better time and a better connection, but we also won't have those fuzzy kind of not quite sure where the consent was because nobody actually took the time to communicate about what they wanted to do, what they didn't want to do, how they wanted to do it, what their boundaries are, what their desires are. And I think this really is an across-the-board thing for partners and in any type of connection. It's sure, if they're long-term relationships, when we've got anger and resentment and other stuff to deal with, as opposed to just somebody you just met that you want to have a sexual fling with. But the basic skills underneath all of that really, are the same skills.
I agree. The same skills. Sorry about the noise. I'm down the street from a fire department. Anyway, we hope this conversation is a hot conversation for some people. Get the sirens going. Yes, it's so important to communicate. And I think that if men can find the words, sometimes some men have trouble finding the words. But if they pay attention, if they really pay attention, that's such a compliment to the woman. And look into her eyes and really listen. The communication may be better. And a lot of more introverted men have a skill set that includes really listening and looking into eyes. And that's very positive, and oftentimes then better communication can come from that. Don't you find that sometimes men and women aren't really listening, but how important that is.
Right. It's so important. So when we're talking about communication skills, I think a lot of people think about talking right? How do I talk better?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you're making a great point, which is it's just as important to learn how to listen better.
Yes.
That's the important part of the equation. You know, and I think also there's a place for inviting communication. So one of the stumbling blocks can be, well, there's a lot of things that keep us from communicating well about sex, right? I mean, mm-hmm. there's a whole list, right? The fact that it's sex, right? So it's all charged. And for a lot of people, you know, shame and shoulds and do's and don'ts, and there's just a lot of things attached to it because it's sex. We don't have good modeling. We've never seen people. Even, you know, when do you watch people communicate about sex? If you're watching porn, not really going to see it there.
No.
If you're watching, you know, romantic movies, even if they're not going to show the details, you still don't see any sexual communication. We probably never really saw anyone have great sexual communication, so we don't learn it there. And then we often are worried about the response we're going to get. So if I say something, will my partner feel criticized? Will my partner feel like I'm telling them what to do or ordering them around? Will it make them feel bad that they're doing it wrong? And so we're so worried that what we say isn't going to come out right, and they're not going to hear it well, and it's just going to derail the whole experience, that we don't say anything. And back to where I sort of started from, which is it's such a gift when you can ask your partner for feedback and communication, because then they feel safe giving it. So it's if you can invite your partner, you know, by going, is this working for you? Would you like this faster or slower? You know, how do you like to be touched? What would you like to have happen now? And when we can ask those kinds of questions, often our partners will just kind of breathe a sigh of relief. Oh, thank goodness they've given me an opening to communicate what I wanted to do anyway, but without without an opening, I didn't know how to start. So that's just another piece of it. There's the talking, there's the listening, and that there's also that inviting that we can do.
And creating. Well, you use the word safe, and the amygdala, the feeling part of our brain, the fear center especially, needs to kind of take a nap, especially for women to reach orgasm and to be fully sexually present. She needs mm-hmm. to feel safe. She needs to feel that she's protected. And so I think a man, if he can convey that he's capable of protecting her, that's another important element. I think there's something primal in a woman's attraction to a man where she feels safe around him and he can demonstrate a concern for her safety. Are you okay getting home? Do you need help? This is a more dating situation.
Right.
Would you like me to walk into your car? This is just also good manners.
I think it is, and I think also that the whole conversation about consent that we can have with a partner is part
mm-hmm.
of that safety. So
mm-hmm.
one of the things I think would be helpful to understand about having conversations about consent is, first of all, it can be hot. It can be an erotic experience. It can be
mm-hmm.
a turn-on. But it's also creating that environment where you're feeling safe communicating, you're feeling safe listening, you're feeling like your boundaries will be honored and respected, and then getting that. And when we make that all clear, we're much more likely to get that than when the boundaries are murky and dark and nobody really knows where they are. So, you know, I just think, personally, I think having a partner who communicates with you around boundaries
mm-hmm.
is such a turn-on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, like, just the hottest thing in the world. And I would hope that that kind of idea could spread more, that instead of thinking, oh, I have to have this horrible consent conversation, we were like, ooh, good, now we get to talk about what we want to do and what we like. And
yeah, it's a reframe.
Each other on and, yeah.
It's a reframe, yeah. And I think it also takes a certain amount of maturity and confidence to have that conversation. And if you can't have the conversation, well, you may not be really ready to have a part of his body in her. You know,
I think that that's a good indicator. If you can't have that conversation, maybe you shouldn't be doing those activities.
Right.
But that really goes against a big cultural myth we have.
Mm-hmm.
And the myth is that our partners will be psychic. They're going to mm-hmm. know what we want and when we want it and how we want it, and they're going to know what our boundaries are, mm-hmm. and nobody knows those things unless we communicate them. But we have this myth because, you know, like I said, the romance movies, you know, they run together in slow motion and then clothes go flying and then they kiss and the fade to dark and the fireworks go off, right?
That's right.
Right? You know, or in porn, the clothes go flying and they don't kiss. And you see, you know, the mechanics of sex happening,
mm-hmm.
Usually without the energy or the connection or the or caring. But, you know, maybe it's there in some porn, but not most of it. But you still don't see those conversations happening. And so the myth is you don't need those conversations. And that's where we get into trouble. That's where we get into the sex where the fireworks don't go off, usually for women, are the ones less likely to have the orgasmic fireworks. Generally speaking, most men can manage to have an orgasm, and women are the ones who are more orgasm challenged.
That's a good way to put it.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, all of this is something that we can change. We don't need to settle for that kind of sex, and we don't need to accept the cultural model that says it's natural and you should just do it and not have to talk about it.
And all of this is important also because we know that desire starts in the mind. I think there's a reason women buy romance novels, by the millions. You know, a lot of women love to dream of the white knight who will sweep her off her feet.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, I remember years ago when I was co-leading women's sexuality groups, and these women had all had trauma in their past, and they were learning to have orgasms, and I joked that they were there because they thought that someday my prince will come, and so will I. They love the dream of the white knight who will sweep them off their feet in a whirlwind of
orgasm.
Yeah.
Right? And no, as if somehow men are born knowing the instructions for how to give women orgasms.
Mm-hmm.
Which is ridiculous, right?
Mm-hmm.
No one is actually born. Women are not born, generally speaking, knowing how to get to their own orgasm. A lot of us have to learn that.
Right.
Many of us, most of us, I think, have to learn how to find our path to orgasm. I certainly did.
Mm-hmm.
And most people who have a penis, you know, had no problem finding their path to orgasm. That was just, generally speaking, something that was pretty easy and automatic for them. So it's a really different learning journey we have to go on. And then if we partner with people who have different equipment from us and different wiring, then there's another learning journey we need to go on of learning what works for these other kinds of bodies. If we partner with people who have the same equipment, it's actually a lot easier.
Sure, sure. And actually, that may be part of the appeal that for some heterosexual women who like to watch, well, men like to watch it too, but two lesbians making love.
Mm.
that it can be hot. Mm-hmm. You know, the women know, a woman knows her body and another woman's body really well. And, but good communication can make the difference, of course, so that you can learn what turns on the man and he can learn what turns on you and turns you on. And I think, you know, what goes along with that is, and the communication is, well, paying attention. You know, the thrill of getting a man's complete and undivided attention is a huge turn-on for most women. Mm-hmm. You know, we want attention paid to us in and out of the bedroom. So don't you agree that a lot of women just feel misunderstood and they're not getting that foreplay, which is emotional, before they even take their clothes off. Emotional foreplay.
Well, I have one of the maps or models I like to use.
Mm-hmm.
What I call the pussies and puppies model. And
oh, okay.
The pussies and puppies model basically says that most women have this kind of core energy that's more cat-like, and most men have a core energy that's more dog-like.
Mm.
Now, that's not set in stone. Some people, it's the opposite. And, of course, we all have a, you know, I'm more pussycat than puppy, but I got some dog in me, too. But I'm more pussycat, and my partner, who is a man, is more of got that dog energy. And I think, first of all, you don't play with a cat the same way you play with a dog. Right?
Yeah, expand on that. I think that's fascinating. I haven't heard you talk about this. Yeah.
We never talked about this. Oh,
no.
There's a lot to this.
And I would remember, I like it, the pussy cat and puppies model.
Okay, so you come over to my house and you meet my kitty cat, and you would like to pet my kitty cat. If you're going, you're like, oh, that cat is so beautiful, I want to pet the pussy, right?
Yeah.
You would not run up to the cat and grab her and roll her on her back to try and rub her tummy. That would never work, right? She would, that you'd be bleeding and she'd be out of there.
Right.
If you want, right? If you want to connect with the pussycat, you've got to start with creating connection and safety. And so what do you do with the cat? You go, you get their attention. And
mm-hmm.
they're looking at you and they're seeing, are you paying attention to them? And then you approach the pussycat. And how do you know how fast to approach? You pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
Pay attention, attuned attention. And then if you go at the right speed, that would be the speed of that particular pussycat,
mm-hmm.
you'll prove that you're safe. And then you start petting them, and you start with the more, the safer areas of their body, the less sensitive. And you start by stroking their back.
Mm-hmm.
And you're proving to the pussycat, I'm safe,
mm-hmm.
and I know how to give you pleasure, and I'm paying attention to your responses. And then maybe you start rubbing their ears and under
mm-hmm.
the skin. And if you take your time and you go at the pussycat's pace, sooner or later they will surrender, and you will get that purring puddle of pussy that you were after.
I love it.
Now.
It's,
yeah?
Yes. And
okay,
so talk
now,
about the doggy. The men
right.
who have the more dog-like model.
Generally speaking. So,
yeah.
For example, my partner, if I wanted to start sex play with my partner,
mm-hmm.
I could basically just grab his genitals and start playing with them, and
right.
he would be happy. Right?
Yeah.
This would really work for him. The same way with most dogs. You meet them, and you could be rubbing their tummy 30 seconds later, right?
Sure.
Dogs are like, touch it, please rub it, like, right, oh, yeah, right? They're really, dogs are kind of they're very enthusiastic and friendly
mm-hmm.
and open, and yes, please rub my tummy, rub it now, rub it more. and so it's a very different kind of play that dog people, who are often penis owners, tend to respond to. So that more genitally focused play. And again, if you're seducing a pussycat, you start from the outside and the edges and the connection and the context, and you slowly work your way in, creating the pleasure and the safety. Whereas with dogs, you just have to invite them to play most of the time. Most of the dogs, you're like, hey, you want to go for a walk? They're like, yeah. Right? Do you want to chase the ball? Yeah. Do you want to have sex? Hell yeah.
That eagerness.
Yeah.
No, it's very true. I like that model so much. It conjures up.
Yeah.
And over everything is play. Playfulness. You know, people forget that sex is play. But approaching your partner the right way so that you can be fully engaged in play makes all the difference, doesn't it?
It does.
Yes. Yeah. So communication.
Well, the way your partner likes to play, not necessarily the way you like to play.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's, again, that playing with dogs and playing with cats really can be very different. And learning what kind of play your partner likes. And then as really I think what you're saying is also remembering that the sexual experience, I like to say, it's like making music together. It's like jamming with another musician.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a spontaneous improv. You're playing music together. You're co-creating it. And it should be fun and creative and interesting. And that's another skill set, which is learning how to be a master musician, really.
Do you and your partner play music together? I mean, actual music? I know you metaphorically.
No.
No.
Yeah.
Yes,
no, neither one of us plays music. No, neither one of us is a
no.
musician.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I know.
Play?
But I know you're. I know you're. But you know what goes along with music in a way is dancing, and dancing together can help a couple sync up. You know, get in the same rhythm, and I think that it can help. We can gradually move into. We were going to talk about some of the beyond communication, some of the actual skills that can make a lover more attractive, and I think. Syncing up, so that would be dancing together. But beyond that, a skilled lover plugs into a woman's breath and her pelvic thrusts, and he follows her lead. And he might even listen to her vocalizations because there may be a pattern, and you can match the man can match his movements to that rhythm, so that maybe rather than the old in and out the man can try rotating his hips, and it may make for a different kind of clitoral stimulation. And for the man, the absence of thrusting might help him even last longer. So syncing up, tied in with dancing, is important.
Yeah, you made so many good points in that.
Yeah.
That I'd almost like to tease them out a little bit. You know,
sure.
The first thing being, I would say, is we tend to think of heterosexual sex as being really focused on intercourse.
Yeah.
And so the first thing I would say is to expand it into, you know, it's this whole feast of playing, dancing, moving, touching together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, it's really helpful for people to kind of expand their idea of what sex is, as opposed to foreplay and then the main act and then you're done. And so I love to invite people to really just look at it as this improvisational dance or music that you're playing together.
Mm-hmm.
Then you made a great point about intercourse, heterosexual intercourse. which is that we have this, I don't know, I call it the porn model of intercourse, which is bam, 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 thrust, thrust, thrust. And it's actually probably the motion that is least stimulating for most women.
Yes.
Right? I would say that at very, very high level arousal, particularly if a woman really knows her path to orgasm and has lots of other skills to enhance and amplify, and it's done at the right time, it can be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think of intercourse as this, you know, hip rotating, sliding, pivoting intersection of bodies that includes many different kinds of motions, it really expands what intercourse can be and has the potential to help a lot more women have orgasms with intercourse, which most women don't. I just have to acknowledge that most women don't have orgasms with intercourse, and that's not only, that's common, that's normal, and that's a learnable skill. But there's nothing wrong with you if you don't come that way. So just to add
only about 25% of women achieve orgasm from vaginal intercourse alone. Mm-hmm. And this statistic doesn't stem from just a study or two. It's based on research spanning more than 80 years and also an extensive analysis of 33 studies. Mm-hmm. And so that, and then furthermore, that 25% of women who actually can reach orgasm with intercourse, it doesn't fluctuate based on the length of intercourse or, and listen up, guys, the size or shape of a man's penis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Size and shape has got nothing to do with it here. Not a thing.
That's right. That's right.
Right? Yeah. It's another myth.
Mm-hmm. Another myth. Yeah. And so it's not a man's stamina or size that makes him a great lover. A lot of guys worry a lot about the size of their package. And I think, you know, start focusing on the most important factor of great sex, and that's the woman. Find out what she likes. Pay attention, right?
Pay attention to the pussycat and
the pussycat, right?
Things, right? Pay attention to the pussycat and the things you were talking about before, connecting with each other's breath. The breath is one of the most powerful tools we have for amplifying our own arousal and connecting with a partner's rhythm, the rhythm of that we're moving our bodies, the sounds we make, all of those things are the ways that we pay attention to our partner and the ways we can learn how to synchronize amplify our erotic connection.
Mm-hmm. Love that word, amplify.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
a lot of times what we need to do to pay attention is slow down.
Absolutely. It's so important. Yeah. Slow down. Let's talk about that. Slowing down.
It's huge. You know, one of the things is that if you're going really fast, you really can't pay that much attention to what's going on. The other thing is that I think, again, one of our cultural maps of sex is we start playing with each other, we get a little turned on, we get more turned on, more and more and more turned on, we have an orgasm, and it's over. It's as if we're just, like, running up a set of stairs, we get to the top, and we go over the edge, and we're done. That's this kind of this, like, one hill, like there's one big hill, we go up it, we go over, we're done. Instead of looking at that as a quick run up the hill, is look at it as something we can dance up and down. So you can go, you can get a little bit turned on, a little bit more, and then slow it down. And then speed it up, and then slow it down. and heat it up and then cool it down. And when we start kind of dancing around with the arousal, building it up and then slowing it down, and every time we actually slow it down, we expand it. It actually gets bigger and deeper. We go deeper into our erotic trance state. And so if instead of thinking, how fast can I get to the goal, we're playing with how slowly and how, and what an interesting way, and with how much pleasure can we play and let go of the goal and just go with the journey. And that leads to much more pleasurable sex for everybody who's involved.
Absolutely. You know, sometimes we think of, well, I think of women as crockpots, and men more as microwave ovens. You know, women, it takes a while for a woman to heat up, and so it's important to think about the pleasure of all those non-penile touches and nibbles and kisses and insertions and licks that you know, will produce orgasms maybe, but it's just that they're not a prelude to anything. They are the point.
Yeah.
Because they are what they are. That's sex. Yeah. Sex just isn't, that's why I encourage my clients to use the word intercourse, because I think of sex as so much more than, most people say sex and they mean intercourse.
Right.
But, yeah. But, anyway.
It's about turning on the whole body.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the genitals, not the mind, but every bit of the body. And the more you turn on the whole body, the more arousal there is, the more energy there is, then the easier it is for women to be orgasmic. And the easier it is to be orgasmic from different kinds of stimulation, including intercourse.
So yes, including intercourse.
Yeah, if you turn the whole body on and you take your time, intercourse is more likely to lead to orgasm for women.
So, we've been touching on this, but let's get into it a little more, and that is arousal, because I know you say that men need much more understanding, not only of women's bodies, and your books speak to that. We can talk about women's bodies and arousal, because these are challenges for a number of men. And women are wanting to have good sex. You know, not just, you know, I think that if a woman doesn't seem to want to have sex a second time with a man, it could be, if she's not enthusiastic about having sex with a man more than once, there's a good chance that his bedroom skills could use a little fine-tuning. And one main reason is the basic anatomy. We've already talked about only 25% of women achieve orgasm from vaginal intercourse alone. But what about the 6,000 to 8,000 nerve fibers in the clitoris and all that's behind it, and the 4,000 in the penis, the nerve fibers? So that's part, too, that, and some men really need to know more about the clitoris and the vestibular bulbs, which is, you're the expert, and you did this wonderful drawing of the vestibular bulbs in one of your books.
I love that. I love the bulbs. So
yeah, me too.
The big picture of this.
I mean, you're the one that got my fiancé, soon-to-be husband, really to become an expert in my vestibular bulbs, and
yay,
it makes a difference. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Women have a network of structures that are all made out of erectile tissue.
Mm-hmm.
And erectile tissue, we're most familiar with it in the form of a penis. Penises are mostly made of erectile tissue, and we know they can go from small and soft to big and hard, and
right,
it's a wonderful, a magical, impressive feat that penises are capable of, right? It's a pretty amazing transformation.
It is.
That body
it's an amazing transformation.
It really is. Yep. Amazing and delightful. women have just as much erectile tissue as men do.
Mm-hmm.
Pound for pound, inch for inch, just as much of that engorgeable, that means it fills with blood and gets big and engorged and erect and swollen and sensitive, just as much of that. It's
mm-hmm.
just that it's arranged very differently. So what women have is a network of structures made out of erectile tissue. Now, think of it like a crown, like a ring, you know, a circuit. And the clitoris, or actually what most people are talking about when they say clitoris, is actually the head of the clitoris, which is just one part of the clitoris. The head of the clitoris is like the jewel in the crown. It's intensely innervated, wonderfully sensitive. Tricky, though, because sometimes it's easy to overstimulate it and irritate it because it's so sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where this intense concentration of nerve endings is, and it's a really important part that needs the right amount of attention at the right time in the right way, and that will vary from woman to woman. That will vary for the same woman from day to day. That will vary within the any particular erotic session, which is why feedback and communication are so important, because that changes all the time. And there's this whole other network of structures. The vestibular bulbs are a pair of lovely, engorgeable bulbs under the labia, one on either side. There's also erectile tissue under the floor of the vagina. There's the three parts of the clitoris, not just the head, but the shaft and the two wishbone-like legs. And then there's also the erectile tissue that's above the roof of the vagina. And so when we understand where all these parts are, and we understand how arousal tends to work in women's bodies, that is, from the outside, gradually moving towards the inner parts, so from the outside to in, from the more general full body to the more specific genital, and when we understand the brain has to get turned on so the woman goes deep into her erotic trance, and all of these parts of the erectile network can be and ideally will be engorged. When you understand sort of all those pieces and kind of can put that all together, like the master musician playing your own instrument, if this is the body that you have, or playing with your partner's body, if this is who you partner with, that's when you develop mastery, and that's when you can get to really expanded arousal, easier orgasms, bigger multis, ejaculation, all these different orgasmic experiences that we have the potential to have. So it's helping the mind get into the erotic trance state, turning the whole body on, turning on all of the genital equipment, and then you've got full, total female arousal. And I will mention that can take 30 to 45 minutes to happen.
30 to 45 minutes, yes. Because women have to learn to connect bodily arousal and emotional pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And so slowing down with lovemaking can help. A vibrator or another sex toy can help. Looking at erotica or fantasizing about sex. It's like a smorgasbord, a sexual smorgasbord of, you know, possibilities. And the journey can be just the journey, and the exploration can be so much fun if only people allow themselves, give themselves permission to be in the moment, to surrender, to pay attention, to play, to do all of these things. But it's really hard. I think one of the things that gets in the way for a lot of women with low desire is that they have body image issues. And I think it can be useful for women to learn to examine their bodies in a non-sexual way without generating distress, because the aim would be to lessen distractions by judgment of physical appearance during sex, because a lot of women are doing that, and that derails them. So look at your, I say to women, look at your body while showering, bathing, drying yourself, and notice when judgments arise, and then guide your mind back to just looking at your body and repeat the exercise, maybe even using a handheld mirror to look at your body and your genitals, and then touch your body and genitals in a non-sexual manner while being aware of the judgments and guiding attention back to what you are doing. These sorts of exercises can be very helpful for a woman to lower her. Women can be so judgmental about their bodies, and it derails their pleasure.
Distraction. It's what? Huge. You know, one of the things that happens with arousal for most women is it's got to flow from the edges to the center. It's got to go past all our different chakras. It's got to go past our thinking and past our communication and our heart and our gut, and it's got to go past our safety. So it's got to go past all these things, and it can get distracted and blocked and derailed much more easily.
Yes.
It's got to get to our genitals, right? And so anything that is going to distract us or derail us, like the body image issues, and that's a wonderful set of practices. I actually have a whole bunch more that I've worked with women over the years with the body image issues. And I'll just throw another one in the mix, which is that when you are having pleasure, when you're in your pleasure, is a great time also to reconnect with and love and appreciate your body. So when you're feeling, when you are feeling turned on to give yourself positive body messages, that's a great time when your brain is very plastic.
Yeah,
so I love to do any kind of reprogramming of our negative messages when we're in a state of arousal. And you
can
do that.
That's such a good idea. Yes,
and you can get a partner to do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have that conversation with an ongoing partner where you say, "Well, you know, I just don't feel good about my tummy. It just you know, and it comes up for me a lot." And so, you know, you can then, when you're in your arousal, you can send your tummy loving messages. You can touch it. Your partner can go, "Oh, I love your tummy. It's so curvy and soft," and they can kiss it. I mean, there's just all these wonderful loving things we can do for ourselves or our partners can do for us, so that we can start getting over the mountain of negative body image issues. I'll say also, I just want to make a point that I was thinking about a few minutes ago, though. All of the stuff we're talking about is learned behaviors. You know?
Yeah.
Learning how to get into our arousal trance. Learning how to reprogram the negative thought. Learning what we like and what we want and need. Learning how to communicate. Learning what turns our partners on. Learning how to be orgasmic.
Mm-hmm.
These are all learned things, and so I really love to emphasize that to people, because we've got this weird idea that somehow it's natural and we shouldn't have to learn it. And
that's a weird idea.
Something wrong with it.
We have to learn so many other things in life. And your books are excellent resources for people to learn these things, both women's anatomy of arousal and the book that I know even more, Succulent Sex Craft, Hands-On Guide to
about,
Erotic Play and Practice.
About, yeah, I mean, it's all about learning how to master your own instrument, how to become an erotic virtuoso, which anyone can learn. Anyone can learn. I think that's just, I can't say that enough. So anyone who's listening and feeling like, "Oh, I'm, you know, I don't know how to do this, or I'm not good at it, or there's something wrong with me," or whatever's going on in your brains out there, you're listening, those negative voices, just start reminding yourself, telling yourself, reprogramming yourself. This is learnable stuff, and if
learnable.
And I can learn it. I can learn this.
And, you're the director, and I'll put all of this in the write-up after the show, but the Intimate Arts Center, so intimateartscenter.com is the website, and you do some teachings there that where you describe a lot of these things. Isn't that true?
Well, there are the books. There's tons of blogs, and there's video blogs.
Yeah.
Shows like this, and there's also a set of online classes and courses.
Online, yeah.
I would say right at this moment, I'm kind of been on hiatus from teaching live.
Yes.
And
yes.
I'm not sure what's happening next. Maybe another book is going to start being born.
Yeah.
We'll see. There's a number of them in there percolating. But there's still lots and lots of ways to get this information. So just go to the website and just start by reading the articles in the blog post and watching some of the little videos and the books. And the online courses are, like, pretty intensive. You know, there's each of those was four sessions that are recorded. So, and there's lots of support materials. So, you know, think of it like, if you wanted to learn how to play an instrument, you know, if I get to the point in my life where I've got the time and the space, I would love to learn how to play an instrument, but I'd have to start from zero. I don't know how to read music. I don't play any instrument. I love music, right? So I would have to say to myself, I can learn this. I wouldn't feel like, oh, I could never learn this. I would just feel like I have to take little steps and I have to learn, I have to practice, and I have to play with it. And over time, I will learn it, just like anyone else learned it. So it's the same with sex. It's all learnable, and with patience and practice, anyone can learn how to have really amazing erotic experiences.
But you say you added two important caveats with patience and practice. And lots of, I know this from my counseling work. Some people hang in and really do make changes, and others are just overwhelmed and don't want to put in the work. And so they leave before the work has really been done. And that's too bad. But
It is. Well, I'll say one thing about learning sex. It's easier than learning how to play an instrument or how to speak French, because we're actually hardwired for ecstasy and pleasure. That's actually in us.
Yes.
And so learning how to have more pleasure, you know, in your body, in your erotic experience, is easier than learning those other things. And the great thing is, if you can just take little steps, and when you take a little step and you get more pleasure, then that's really a lovely way to support and encourage yourself to take the next step. So you don't have to do a million things. Just the next time you're having an erotic experience with yourself or with somebody else, just breathe more.
Breathe more,
just
right.
Breathe more. Enhance your breathing. Breathe a little faster. Breathe a little slower. Breathe a little deeper. Just that. Next time you're getting close to an orgasm, make a little bit of sound, a little bit more sound, and keep your breath moving a little bit more. And you'll get there more easily, or you'll have a bigger, better orgasm. And then you'll get that feedback. Like, that was it. All right, next time I'll play with breath and sound together. You know, the time after, you know, and I'll do that the next 10 or 20 times. And then that will get easier and more natural. And then I'll add another practice, another skill. And so you take those little steps, you know, and then a little, it doesn't take long to just get the little positive, yummy, ooh, that felt better. Yeah, that's what we need. Those little, like, okay, you may not get all the way, you know, to the land of outrageous orgasms in one session, but if you have a little more pleasure, that's wonderful.
That is
and if
wonderful.
Something doesn't
and
work.
Breathing more
and if
also
something,
helps. Yeah. Doesn't it help with arousal because you're putting more oxygen in the body? And so just physiologically, it also is useful there.
Yeah. And I just want to say one more thing.
Yeah,
if something doesn't work, that's okay too. That was an interesting experiment, and now you know something that doesn't help you, and you can try other things.
Right.
So it's all about being open to learning, the learning and the running in the experiments.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, so we've covered a lot. We're coming to the end of the program, and I'm so glad you're coming back on the 27th of March. Because we have more to cover. There's always plenty to talk with you, Sherry Winston, about. And I would say to the men listening to this that if you can really listen to this program and then commit to being an epic lover, that there is perhaps no greater challenge and no greater prize. And if you have a female partner that you care about, she deserves that from you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree?
I agree, and I will also add, it will come back to you, you know, it multitudes more, that when you, you know, when you're with a partner and you give them more pleasure and then they're having more pleasure, then they give you more pleasure and you get this wonderful sort of virtuous cycle. So it's enlightened self-interest, right?
Yeah.
The more pleasure we give, the more generous and loving our partner will be back. And then we just create this wonderful circuit of more and more abundant pleasure.
Yeah.
So,
it's just a delightful virtuous cycle or circle, as you say.
Mm. Yeah,
and then,
isn't it great when you can melt your partner into ecstasy? I mean, it's a wonderful, powerful feeling, too, to know you're responsible for inciting ecstasy in your partner and just watching them melt into it, you know, when you get that purring puddle of pussy.
The purring puddle of pussy. Let's end the program on that because I love your... The dog and the cat, the pussy model. There's the music. We'll have Sherry back again. Thank you so much.
Thank you
for this program, and we'll talk again on the 27th. Bye, everybody. E se ti perderei nel labirinto di un amaro.